Are you a Catholic woman who loves your faith, but finds certain aspects of living it out challenging and confusing? Are you a Catholic wife striving for a healthy, holy marriage and sex life, but don't know where to turn for straightforward, faithful, nitty-gritty answers to some of your deep and delicate questions? Are you a Catholic mom who's tired of the compare and despair game we all fall victim to on social media, and are just in need of some solidarity as you discover your own unique motherhood? Are you tired of the sunshine and rainbows pitch? Want to lean into the both and of the mess that happens when the truths of our faith get lived in a fallen world? Well, if that's where you find yourself, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Emily Frazee, your host of the Total Wine Podcast. I'm here to dig deep and tackle topics that we are all curious about, but maybe too afraid to ask. I'll answer it all with honesty and humor, because living the faithful life can make you either laugh or cry, and well, laughing burns more calories. Welcome to the show. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Total Wine Podcast. I'm your host, Emily Frazee, and it's good to be back. I am out of the woods my child is out of the woods, I should say. I had to take a break from writing and podcasting and all of the things because my little baby had a minor surgical procedure, not like life-threatening or anything, but just something that needed to be done that was corrective. And so, you know, just kind of focused on his recovery. And woof, I gotta tell you, any mama out there who's listening who has had their baby go through surgery, 0 out of 10 stars. Just even if it goes perfectly well, just 0 out of 10 stars for the whole situation. Just never again. I told my kids, I was like, they're already not allowed to break their bones because I cannot handle bones breaking. But you know, they can never have surgery ever for any reason under any circumstances. Just no, that was enough. I started joking. I was like, you know, I guess like aliens are a thing now, according to some recent congressional testimony. So I mean, like, okay, if that's true, then you know what? Will Smith, bring your flashlight, dude. Come Men in Black me. I would love for certain aspects of this experience to just be erased from my memory. Just woof. Anyway, everything, the surgery went fine and his recovery went extremely well. And he is back to being his normal little self. You know, completely back to normal, which is great. It's wonderful. But, you know, everybody was telling me, they're like, oh, he'll have no memory of it, Mama. It's going to be okay. And I'm like, I know he's not going to have any memory of this. Me, on the other hand, again, I want to be Men in Black, please and thank you. But this was an episode that I've been thinking about recording since NFP week wrapped. And actually, I was even thinking about recording it during NFP week. But, you know, spoiler alert, that didn't happen because I'm here weeks after. But hey, this is good. Like, we talk about NFP year round. It's not just confining everything to a week. But I was thinking about it, you know, when I share my story and, you know, I give, like, I am passionate about giving people the space to talk about the sucky parts of NFP, because for the most part, we don't really have permission and we don't know that it's okay to talk about the sucky parts of practicing our faith. I think we kind of have this mentality that, like, if we do everything God's way, then our life will turn out perfectly and we will be happy. No, it's not a formula to make sure that everything goes perfectly. That's not what Christianity, Catholicism is about. It's about, you know, how do I get to heaven? And the road to getting to heaven in a fallen world is going to be riddled with really sharp rocks and, you know, just sucky stuff that's gonna hurt. And we have to have space to talk about that. I always take it back to the cross. I always take it back to Christ's passion. You know, he was accomplishing his Father's will perfectly. And look what that looked like. And look what he did. Look how he acted. Was he smiling? No, that would have been creepy as all get out. He started it off by sweating blood, you know? So I'm very passionate about giving people this permission, giving people the space to talk about the sucky bits, because I firmly believe that that is one of the key elements to being able to practice NFP successfully. That is one of the key components of being able to really lean into the richness and the joy of our faith and what living the joy that living our faith can bring about. We have to be able to say the truth that sometimes it also sucks. So I'm very passionate about that, but I also recognize that like sometimes like I am kind of like guilty of the pendulum swing that I am constantly railing against, right? That like I see everybody out there just being like, oh yes, you know, we are faithful Catholics, therefore life is great, and we have seven children and nothing is going wrong, and da 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 da, or like we have no children but nothing is going wrong, and da da da, because we are faithful, so therefore everything is grand. And it's like, so okay, yes, I'm pendulum swinging away from this kind of more predominant, certainly more attractive, approach, which says that, you know, you need to dress everything up and make it look nice. And I reject that entirely because that's a lie, you know? And we serve the God of truth. We serve the God of truth. And if we're going to serve the God of truth, we're going to be honest about what's going on. But at the same time, I started thinking about it and I was like, okay, so if NFP is sucky and like living, you know, our faith is sucky, like, okay, why do it? And I'm like, all right, so maybe I should do an episode where I answer that question, why do NFP if it sucks? You know? And obviously it's not all sucky. And I think, you know, TLDR, at the end of the day, it is good. I would not be promoting this, I wouldn't be pitching this if I did not believe in my core that it is good. But again, in a fallen world, things that are good for us aren't necessarily easy, aren't necessarily pain-free. But how do we navigate that? So anyway, so I thought I'd spend some time today with basically giving you the reasons why I have reconciled my understanding of NFP and practice it. And it is rooted in church teaching, but it's basically the way that I have come to embrace it. And my purpose in starting by framing it that way is to say that like if you don't agree with me, that doesn't mean you're going to hell. It's not like I'm articulating church teaching and like if you don't agree with me, it's like, oh, you're a bad Catholic. Like, no. This is just like this is the way that I have come to reconcile it in my own mind. And so for whatever it's worth, I'm putting it out there. Might be worth nothing. You might listen to this and it might just royally tick you off. You might listen to this and be like, oh, okay, yeah, I mean, like, cool, but it's not really super satisfying. Or you might listen to this and be like, yes, this makes so much sense. I don't know, whatever. Any of these outcomes and anything in between is possible, but I'm just putting it out there because I feel like recording an episode. I have time, I have energy, my kids recovered, and here we go. Okay. So really what we have to start with is the definition of sex. And the definition of sex, according to the Catholic Church, is an act that is fully unitive and procreative. And I think just to further elaborate, this is kind of the piece that's missing, is that it is fully unitive and procreative, both in the biological and spiritual spheres. And I think that's a really important component. There's not just physical union or biological procreation, but there is also spiritual union and spiritual procreation. That you need both of these things happening in order to have a complete, whole sexual act. The other elements of sex are that it's an act that is total, free, faithful, and fruitful. And again, those four things also work on both the biological and spiritual planes. So coming into this, that is the definition of sex from which I am operating. Okay? An act that is fully unitive and procreative, both in the biological and spiritual sense, and that is total, free, faithful, and fruitful, also in the biological and spiritual sense. Between a married man and woman. Can't forget that in this day and age. Okay. So that's the definition under which I'm operating. And the reason why that's really important to articulate is that I was listening to a podcast episode recently where a birth trauma podcast, and I was really excited to listen to it. They were the podcast host was talking to a sex therapist. I was like, oh, and she was going to talk about like sex after birth trauma. I was like, yes, give me this. Like, let's, I would love. And, you know, I knew it was going to be secular, but I was like, there's got to be some, like, some glimmers of truth here. Some nuggets of wisdom I can pull out. Like, truth is not something that you can only find within the Catholic Church. Like, truth is the truth and it's part of nature. So you can find it in other places. And so I was like, all right, let me see what I can find. And I had to shut it off because the sex therapist basically said that after birth trauma, you have to redefine sex to be something. And this is what she said, that sex should be defined as a meaningful, pleasurable experience. And it's like, okay, I was listening, the first thought that I had popping in my head, I was like, okay, if that's the definition of sex, I've had sex with a sunset. So, and really, like, the purpose that she was, or the goal I think she was trying to achieve was, after birth trauma, like, you have to move the goalposts, right? Like, sex is not necessarily going to be on the table, but maintaining intimacy is always on the table for married couples. And so, but to change the definition of sex to just be a meaningful, pleasurable experience is to water down sex to be meaningless. Like, if sex is just a meaningful, pleasurable experience, it's like, literally, I've had sex with a sunset by that definition. And that's obviously not what sex is. So that's why I started this by, like, okay, what am I defining sex to be? What is the definition of sex under which I'm operating? Okay. So now the question is that under that definition, an act that is fully unitive and fully procreative, spiritually and biologically, when you're having sex, you are either trying to have a child or trying to not have a child. That's really the, and I know there's the crowd of like, we're trying to whatever. Okay, if you're trying to whatever, technically speaking, you're in the try to conceive camp. I know that this gets like wishy-washy. I might have ticked somebody off. I don't know. I don't really care. Because, like, yes, you're not like, if a baby comes, great, but we're not, you know, we're just kind of, we're open to whatever. We're open to not having, you know. Okay, I get it. I get the definitions. I get the nuance. I get the in-betweens. But at the end of the day, that's what's happening. Because fundamentally, the biological functions of sex are ordered towards creating a new life. Sex is always carries the potential for procreation because men are always fertile. Every time a man ejaculates, he releases sperm, unless there's fertility issues. So every act of sex always has the potential to create new life. Doesn't necessarily mean that a child will be conceived, obviously, but it always has that potential. And that's what has to be maintained in order, that's the integrity that has to be maintained, the potential, not the actual, but the potential. So anything that we're doing that messes with the potential to create new biological life is going to tear down all of those other aspects of sex. The spiritual and the physical unitive aspect, the total, free, faithful, and fruitful components of sex. If we are messing with that potential to create new life in a chemical, surgical, or barrier means, biochemical, surgical, barrier means, we are eroding all of those other aspects of sex. So the question that becomes is, okay, if every time we have sex, we are either trying to avoid or trying to achieve pregnancy, what is the means by which my spouse and I can maintain the integrity of the act of sex, can maintain the wholeness of the act of sex, the unitive and the procreative, the total, free, faithful, fruitful aspects of sex? How do we, really, it's the goal is, in a fallen world, what is the framework or the apparatus or the mechanism by which we can seek to have a whole sex life. See, in a fallen world, a world where there is sin, there is rupture. There is disintegration. And the goal, the purpose, the reason why marriage is a sacrament is because we need that grace so that we can reintegrate, so that we can, where there is rupture, we can repair the rupture so that there can be wholeness. That's the point. There will always be ruptures, but because of the cross of Christ, there is always the possibility for repair. And so that within our sex lives, that's the goal, is wholeness, not rupture. So there's all kinds of different ways that we can avoid or achieve pregnancy, right? But fundamentally, the question that I ask, and this is ultimately what helped me really fully embrace NFP, even with all of its sucky bits, is which framework, which method, which means is going to help me to pursue wholeness? Because that is what is going to be the most healing, the most grace-filled, the most enriching for my marriage. It's not about having the best possible sex. It's not about having the most possible sex. It's which one brings about wholeness, brings about repair. That's what I want. That's ultimately what I want. So when you start looking at all of these different options and different methods, you know, like you can have tubal ligation and vasectomy and the surgical side of things. You can have, all sorts of different hormonal contraception. You can have different barrier methods, condoms, diaphragms, spermicides, you know, all those types of things. And then you can have periodic abstinence and cycle charting. Okay, so out of all of these methods, which one is going to bring about wholeness? Well, obviously surgical is out, because I'm literally mutilating perfectly healthy body parts in order to achieve the end of not conceiving a child. So biologically, there is rupture. Surgically, like I have mutilated a body part in order to achieve this end. Well, there's no way to achieve wholeness through mutilation. Then with hormonal contraception, now, I don't need my faith. I tell people this all the time. I don't need my faith to tell me why I should never touch hormonal contraception with a 10-foot pole. I don't need that. IUDs, the pill, the patch, the insert, whatever. No, that is just nasty crap. I don't want it in my body. Now, I do kind of want to take a little tangent here. There is a huge distinction. And I've actually opened this conversation on Instagram. I have a highlight saved that you can check out. I think it's called Real BC on my highlights, Real Birth Control. But I opened it up for women who actually use birth control for health reasons. I was like, let's talk. I want people to understand that there is this segment of the female population that, like, they have serious health issues. And when they went to their doctor and they said, how do I fix these issues? The only solution they were given was birth control. And for any number of reasons, that is the solution that they have to go with. Now, I can hold space for the fact that, like, yes, there's nothing morally wrong with taking birth control for health issues. Nothing morally wrong with that. I know some Catholics are very confused about that. But there's nothing morally wrong with it. Every single, especially if you're not sexually active, it's not acting as a contraceptive, right? So there's nothing morally wrong with using hormonal birth control for health reasons, to address health issues. I can absolutely hold space for that reality and for the fact that there are women on birth control for perfectly moral reasons, and say that is a sorry excuse for medical care, and medical doctors and pharmaceutical companies are, it's criminal. It's criminal that this is literally the only option that is given to women for serious health issues. And I mean, like, this is kind of like a Western medical problem, like, right? Like, this, like, even beyond birth control, like, if we have a problem, we go to the doctor, we get a pill, we take the pill, we fix the problem, right? Like, this is just kind of like how we approach healthcare in our country, like in Western medicine. This is what we do. And the Catholic Church, believe it or not, is not going to like come in and tell doctors like this is wrong, because like the church trusts that like doctors have the best interest of human beings in mind and are going to work to try to find the best possible solution that they can. They'll come in, like, if you're talking about ethical or moral issues, right? Like, they'll come in and say, like, no, this is not okay. But, like, every single medical treatment that we have has side effects, right? Like, taking Tylenol has side effects. Negative side effects on the human body. Is the church going to come in and be like, you can't take Tylenol because there's also these negative side effects? No. But also, you know, on the flip side, like, you as the person taking Tylenol for pain, you know, it's a matter, I think, of prudence and charity to be like, okay, what is the cause of this pain? Can I manage the pain at the same time I'm also trying to figure out what the root cause of it is and address that at the root instead of just doing symptom management? That's my biggest beef with hormonal birth control. It's symptom management, and no one cares to actually get to the root problem. That's my biggest beef with it. I perfectly understand that, like, and I understand on an intellectual level, not on an experiential level, that, you know, women have severe enough symptoms where birth control is like, yeah, give me that pill. But then it bothers me that so few women are actually on it with fully informed consent. They're not told by their doctors how it works. They're not told the side effects, the risks, and they're on it for an extended period of time as though it is a cure when it is no such thing. And in the meantime, their doctor has no interest in getting to the root cause of these very serious issues. That's a huge problem. That's my beef with hormonal birth control. So again, like, I can hold space for the fact that this is the best option for some women for health issues, and doctors should have a reckoning for that. Both and. So that's where I stand on hormonal contraception. Now, barrier method, okay? So a lot of people are like, all right, well, I mean, at the end of the day, like, condoms, I mean, come on, like, really? Like, but again, if the goal that we're striving for with sex is wholeness, barriers, literally, it's a barrier. It's a withholding. It's a preventing of sharing of the whole self. Sharing, like, giving and receiving of the whole self. Yes, we're talking about bodily fluids, which some of you are like, does it really matter that much? Are we really that technical? But there is, you know, if we come at this from a theology of the body approach, we are embodied spirits. Our physiological design and the things that come out of our bodies also have like a spiritual implication, right? So, like, ejaculation, what is, like, male semen? What is this telling me about, you know, what is this telling me about a man's contribution to life? And I'm not going to get, like, into that too much. I'm just putting the question out there. Because that's something worth considering. Like, yes, there is a physical exchange of bodily fluids, and we can be a little grossed out by that, whatever. But also, what is that telling me about the spiritual nature of this act? It had there's something there, and I haven't thought about that too much, but there's something there. So a barrier, a withholding, like, I'm literally a spermicide. I'm literally going to kill this part of my husband inside of me. You know, it just, like, this, how this is not bringing about wholeness. That's a rupture. It's a literal barrier. It's a withholding. And so at the end of the day, anything, you know, hormonal contraception, going back to that for a quick second, you know, hormonally, you are altering the physiology, the psychology even, of a woman. So you are interfering with who the woman is. Like, it's messing with a woman on a psychological level. We know this, right? Like, what, this is why, like, some of the noted side effects of hormonal birth control is depression, anxiety, and panic attacks. We know this. So anything that alters the nature of sex or the nature of man or woman as God designed them is not going to bring about wholeness. It's going to bring about rupture. And again, at the end of the day, it's not about having the most possible sex. And I think that this is where we kind of have to do a gut check on ourselves. Because a lot of one of the questions that I get back is like, well, Emily, but sex is very important in marriage. Yes. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that you need to be having it all the time. See, that's the mistake that we make. That because sex is important and integral to marriage, like, and this is something that I've brought up before. Like, sex is literally, in Catholic theology, in Catholic moral theology, sex is literally listed nowhere else except within the lifelong covenantal union of man and woman. So yes, it is the defining feature of the marital relationship. It is the thing that sets the relationship between a man and a woman apart from all others. So yes, it's a very big deal. Very big deal. I'm not trying to minimize sex and be like, yeah, it's not really that important. You don't really need to have it that often. No. But we have to be careful. Because what is the end goal of marriage? The end goal of marriage is not to have the most possible sex. The end goal of marriage is to get you and your spouse to heaven. That's the purpose of a vocation. Now, part of the one of the facilitators is absolutely a healthy sex life. But a healthy sex life doesn't necessarily mean a sex life, a couple that is engaging in sex frequently. You could be having sex with your spouse every single day, but if it's because your spouse is sexually abusing you, that's not a healthy marriage, right? So that's actually an indication of a very unhealthy and abusive relationship. Certainly not one that's going to get the spouses to heaven. That's a huge impediment to getting to heaven. So frequency is not telling me anything about the health of a marriage without taking in a bunch of other factors. And so the goal here is not to have the most possible sex. The goal here is bringing about that wholeness in one another, that union, the two becoming one, right? And again, there is the biological, there is the physical, and there is the spiritual and the emotional and the mental. There's the visible and the invisible, the both and. And it's not so much about balancing those two spheres as it is integrating them. I've actually started to shift a lot. You know, we always talk about this word balance, but that means that we're kind of, you know, we're, if you think about like, what is it? The scales, like the justice scales, you have like the two cup, you know what I'm talking about? Like if you look at, it's very common in relief sculpture on the sides of judicial buildings. In the pediments of judicial buildings. Look it up. You'll know what I'm talking about. But the scales, right? So we think about balance, that like it needs to be the same on both sides. So there needs to, it kind of implies this teetering back and forth, this seesawing back and forth between these two spheres. But no, wholeness is not so much about going back and forth as it is about integration, as it is about bringing together. It's about fusion. It's about recognizing that sin has caused a rupture between the physical and the spiritual. And that the work that we have to engage in is about reunifying the physical and the spiritual. And this is literally the definition of chastity. Chastity is the integration of our sexuality with the whole person. It's about seeing that, yes, sex is good. Sex is good, and it is good. It is so good for husbands and wives to have a good, mind-blowing, toe-curling, just explosive sex life. Please, yes, let that be one of your goals. Okay. Absolutely. But because we live in a fallen world, because there is this disintegration of body and soul, we have to work to bring about that reintegration. It is so easy for us to view sex as something. Sex can very easily become a band-aid. How many of us think that if my husband and I, or my spouse and I, are having frequent sex, well, our relationship's fine? Is it? Are you using sex to bypass really important conversations you're supposed to be having? So some differences, some disagreements that you just don't want to deal with? But you just go and you have sex and you know you get your oxytocin and you get your physical release and like things are fine until the next time you have sex. That's not healthy. And that happens. People use sex to cover up deeper marital issues. So again, the goal is not frequency. The goal is wholeness. Then, of course, you know, one of the things that I come across frequently in my line of work is, well, you know, just have sex whenever and just let the babies come, or it's a sin to deprive your spouse. It's a sin against justice to refuse sex to your spouse. Well, I've got an episode coming out at some point in the very near future. I don't want to give too much away. But back in the 1800s, there was a guide. I'm going to give a lot away. I'm not going to give too much away. Basically, you'll have to wait for this episode. It's an interview with my very good friend, Dr. Sarah Bartel. She actually came across something that official church document. It was at the very least a venial sin for a husband not to refuse to help his wife achieve orgasm. Not joking. This is from the 1800s, okay? She's going to get into this in this episode, so just when you see Dr. Sarah Bartel's episode drop, run, don't walk, to listen, because she shared that with me on air for the first time, and my jaw was on the floor. I was like, this is amazing. Anyway, so no, it's not a sin against justice to refuse your spouse sex without any nuance whatsoever. It's also a sin against justice for a husband to refuse to learn his wife and please his wife. And that's from an official church document. Pre-Vatican II. That was my favorite part. I was like, see, we've always upheld this. Anyway. Again, if it is a sin against justice to refuse your spouse for any reason without any nuance, that is fundamentally a threat to the unitive aspect and the procreative aspects of sex on the spiritual level. Now, I know everybody's out there, they're like, well, you know, sometimes wives are manipulative and vindictive. I'm like, please show them to me. Like, who are these women? And also, if they are being manipulative and vindictive, the problem is not a sexual one. So the solution does not lie in the sexual sphere. She needs to go, like, I don't know, see a therapist, see a spiritual director, like something. She needs to go talk to somebody to figure out, like, what is going on in me that I'm trying to, you know, be cruel to my spouse by refusing sex. That's something that's worth investigating. Not just push through, honey, and let him, you know, and spread your legs and be a sperm receptacle. No, that's not the solution. That is fundamentally a threat to the union of marriage. So again, at the end of the day, why do I think NFP is good? So I've gone through all this stuff that's like crappy. Okay, so why do I think NFP is good? Well, because NFP forces a husband and wife to put communication at the forefront of their marriage. Communication cannot be bypassed and NFP practiced successfully. If a husband and a wife struggle in the area of communication, which is another way of saying if a husband and wife struggle in the area of intimacy, NFP is going to suck. And what NFP does in this case is it's bringing that problem to the foreground. And it's saying, hey, it's waving like huge flags. Hey, this is a really big problem. We suck at communicating. We need help. We need to figure out how to talk to each other, how to develop this intimacy. See, the thing is that if NFP is causing problems in a marriage, which is really saying that abstinence is causing problems in a marriage, what that's really saying is that NFP is putting a microscopic focus on the issues of communication between a husband and a wife. And it's not going to let you bypass it. And yes, that sucks so much. It sucks so much. But that's what it's doing. It's saying, here is a huge problem. And if we're going to achieve wholeness, if we are going to achieve the true union that we're seeking, we have to work through this. We might need help. We might need individual therapy. We might need couples therapy. We might need a spiritual director. We might just need permission to tell each other, like, hey, I hate that we can't have sex tonight. I really want to have sex with you. But if we do, we will make a baby. And it's not a loving, generous decision for us to make a baby right now. And so I'm loving you, actually. I'm respecting the integrity of the act of sex by saying that if it is not a fully loving, generous decision for us to have a child right now, then I will not lie with my body. I will not pretend to give you my whole self when I am doing no such thing. I will wait until I can. Until with reckless abandon, I can say, yep, here is all of me, baby. Let's go. Ultimately, that's what NFP does. All of these other mechanisms of preventing pregnancy do not respect the integrity of the act of sex. They do not respect the integrity of the person. They allow bypassing. Well, we don't have to have this conversation because, you know, you had a vasectomy, I had a tubal ligation. If we have sex, we are definitely not having a baby. So I don't really have a reason to say no. It kills communication. And I'm not saying, by the way, I'm not saying that you're a bad person for being tempted by it. Lord, listen to me. When my husband and I had our second surprise baby, we were like, all right, so condoms, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Seriously, because at that point, it was serious for us. Like, serious. Like, I cannot keep having C-sections. Like, that was, like, my second C-section after that. Like, physically, medically, this is not okay. And I know some of you are in insanely dire situations where, literally, if you got pregnant, you would die. I know you're in those situations and you're listening to this and you're like, okay, so Emily, you're telling me that I basically, like, with the way that my cycles work, my husband and I literally can never have sex the way that things are working out right now, because if I have a baby, I will die. And you're telling me that the church and God is like, well, suck it up, buttercup. First of all, no, God is not saying suck it up, buttercup. But again, it comes back to this question. What is sex? What is sex? The reason why it is this beautiful experience shared between couples is not because there is an exchange of bodily fluids. Not because there is an orgasm. Don't get me wrong. If it wasn't for orgasms, I don't know that we would sign up for marriage. Let's just, certainly not childbirth, like, just being honest, okay? that yes, there is this intense physical pleasure that was purposefully designed by God, I think, to perpetuate the human species. I wouldn't do this again if it weren't for that. But it's not just about that. It is unitive and procreative both in the biological and in the spiritual realms. We cannot overlook, we cannot bypass the spiritual. And it's, again, it's not about balancing. It's about seeing these things as integrated. And recognizing that the reason why we separate these two is because we live in a fallen, ruptured world that has separated them. Why did death enter the world with sin? Well, because death is a separation of the body and the soul. And sin has caused a rupture between body and soul. And that's our hard work, is to reintegrate. To bring about that, to seek that wholeness. And so at the end of the day, if I cannot, without any trouble whatsoever, say, I bring my whole self, all of myself, into this place with you, my darling, my beloved, and I receive all of you, every aspect of you in return. If I cannot say that, but I have sex, I'm lying. That's what it is. It's a lie. And by the way, when I say give and receive the whole self, this includes the aspects of us that maybe we don't particularly care for. The ones that we prefer would stay hidden. Ladies, I know a lot of you, maybe it's low libido. Maybe it's like, you know, I really don't want to have sex right now. You know, this can swing the other way, that the advice that you probably hear the most is like, oh, I should push through and have sex. That's withholding. You're withholding this part of your husband that says, I'm actually really not that interested in sex right now. And you're not talking to him about it. You're not communicating that to him about it. You're just pushing through and having sex because that's what you've been told. But that's not union. That's not bringing about procreation and union in their truest sense. It's eroding it. What should happen, again, the intimacy, sex is part of this bigger picture of intimacy within a marriage. And if we're going to bring about the wholeness of sex, we need to bring about intimacy within the whole of the marriage. And again, that's what NFP forces. It really doesn't allow you to bypass those issues that you're facing. I don't think I've ever come across a single person, myself included, who had issues with NFP, who, once you started digging into it, the issue really wasn't with NFP. It was with someone's understanding of sex, with the way that they viewed themselves, the way they viewed children, the way they viewed their spouse. It was a microscopic look at a bigger problem, a deeper problem. And that's what needs to be addressed. And so ultimately, that's why I think NFP is such a good thing for marriages, is because it doesn't allow you to get away with being selfish. It doesn't allow you to bypass. You have to face these problems if you're going to practice it successfully. Now, the problem there is that most of us do not have spaces that support us as those problems arise. That's the problem. To me, that's the biggest problem. And that is, so again, that's kind of coming full circle. That's why I am passionate about providing that space of talking about the sucky bits. Because I think that you have to know that it is okay for me to struggle. It's okay for me to have a hard time figuring this out, to have a hard time implementing this. Of course! Look at the world we live in. Sex is everywhere. And not in a good way. Of course you're having trouble cultivating a healthy, whole sex life in your sacramental marriage. Because you don't really see it represented. And so you have to have that space to talk about it. But at the end of the day, that's what you got to do. You have to address it. These problems exist whether or not NFP is there. It's just that with these other methods, you don't have to deal with it. But by not dealing with it, you are not bringing about that union, that two becoming one flesh, that fruitfulness that you have been called to in your marriage. And again, I'm not just talking about children. Fruitfulness includes children, but is much bigger than that. Procreation, obviously, is talking about children, but it's also talking about something else. There's a spiritual component to it as well, that every total, free, fruitful, and faithful act of sex between a married man and woman will always procreate new life between the two of them, whether or not a child is ever conceived. So that's why, ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm like, yeah, NFP is hard. NFP forces me to deal with things that I'd rather not deal with. But that's why I am grateful that I have it. Because that is what is bringing about the goodness and the beauty in my marriage. It's forcing me to address issues that I could otherwise leave completely unaddressed. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I hope it brightened your day and that you laughed as much as you learned. If you're enjoying the show and want more people to learn about what I share here, please leave a review and even share with a friend. I hope you'll join me again soon. Until then,